This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And joining us via Skype is Pastor Martin Lindstedt, who I am eager to find out as much as I can about him. Pastor Lindstedt, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Giles. I referred to myself in my writings, and I've been writing for about 15 years. I've been 16 years in the movement, and I first referred to myself as Pastor Martin Luther Dierzynski Lindstedt, Archbishop of Missouri for the Church of Jesus Christ Christian/Aryan Nations of Missouri, which is a public corporation incorporated in Missouri, and the lead plaintiff of a lawsuit against Senator Barack Hussein Obama and a number of other defendants, including Traitor Glenn Miller.
Well, we'll get to that aspect. That's something I hear you repeat often. I want to get to that and talk about that at length. But could you do this for us? Could you give us a biography of yourself?
I was born in Pierce, South Dakota. And you and me, Mr. Giles, are much alike in that I'm a South Dakotan and you're a Mississippian. And people say, why are South Dakotans and Mississippians so much alike? And the answer of it is Mississippians can't stand niggers, and South Dakotans can't stand red niggers at all either. And South Dakota and Mississippi are probably the two most racist states in the entire Union. I was born on December 25th, 1957, in Pierce, South Dakota. I was raised in Hughes County, which is its county seat is Pierre, and the state capital is Pierre, South Dakota, on the East River. And my maternal parents were raised on the West River side in Stanley County, which is capital is Fort Pierre. And in any case, I have an inheritance coming from Swedish, I'm about 65% Swedish, and the rest is here Prussian, and a little bit of what my grandfather Fred Lindstedt called Jenny Irish, which is Scots Irish, and he didn't much care for Norwegians or anybody other than Swedes. But at the age of 7, we moved down to Missouri to get away from my grandmother, who was an evil bitch, and she went ahead and murdered her husband. And got away with it, because she had all the lawyer dogs on her side. And pretty well, we ended up having to scramble to live 750 miles away in Granby, Missouri, a farm outside of Granby, Missouri. And we managed to make it. And in the younger days, I was actually such a big Whigger that I served for 2 years as a fire and direction control specialist, i.e. an enlisted man, in the 2nd Battalion, Charlie Battery, 2nd Battalion, 42nd Field Artillery, stationed in West Germany in Krelsheim. And it was a nuclear missile tip unit. So I was actually going ahead and pretty well telling the missile crews where to go ahead and fire their ground-launched nuclear-tipped Lance missile. And pretty well, after I got out of the Army, I was just in there for 2 years to go ahead and get money to go to college. I'd flunked out of engineering school, and I ended up getting a degree. So I don't have much use for college-educated people, because essentially I was paid to go to college. And pretty well, I got good grades because I was fairly sharp, pretty smart, read quite a bit. And pretty well, I just spent most of my time buying guns and chasing pussy here when I was a college student. It was a whole lot better than working.
I'm listening. This is it. You've got my attention.
I've got more money as a graduate at the bottom of my class of the Crowder College Truck Driving School than I ever have as a intellectual, edumacated Whigger. The college education didn't really pay for anything, but I actually read more books now than I ever did as a college student. And I do use the college library to go ahead and get things on interlibrary loan. anyway, I've been, what happens is what turned me against Zog is that my dad.
Let me just try to fill in the gap. When you got out of the Army, you went to college, and then what'd you do after you got out of college?
Oh, for a little while, I went ahead and, you know, managed a convenience store, but that didn't fit me. And pretty well, what I then did is I found work as, you know, as a factory worker, and then I worked as a truck driver, and I've lost my CDL because I was in prison for 3.5 years. But Pearl, Mississippi used to be, when I hauled chickens in the early and mid-90s, Pearl, Mississippi was the only place on the entire Tyson chicken plant, you know, all the way from Cummings, Georgia, to Springdale, Arkansas, which was manned all together by niggers instead of beaners. Pearl, Mississippi was quite unusual because it had a nigger workforce and hardly any beaners, and the rest of the places has just been overturned by beaners. You know, I'm living in Granby between Neosho, which has had a Tyson's plant, and Monette, which is called Mexinet, and it's just like living in freaking Mexico. You know, but I live in a place filled of Anglo mestizos, as they're called, who claim to have a bunch of Cherokee or whatever Indian blood in them, and Eric Thompson calls them Anglo mestizos. And, you know, pretty well, they don't, you know, there's not too many beaners, and I've seen one nigger walking down the road. I don't know what the hell the nigger's doing around here, but everybody keeps an eye on that nigger. And, anyway.
So after you got through driving trucks, what'd you do?
Well, what happens is that, I pretty well got an inheritance, because this old bitch of my grandmother finally croaked off here. She got mad because I'd managed to go ahead and get $5,000 a year from my mother and the rest of us. And pretty well, essentially I got a income from property in South Dakota, which comes to a guaranteed income of $10,000 a year. Now, $10,000 a year may not seem very much. It probably seems adequate to you. But it's more than enough adequate to me, especially since our grandchildren, you know, have been taken away. But anyway, my dad, you know, ran his mouth to this FBI agent, which wasn't smart, and he got five years for threatening to kill one of Jenny's lawyers, who was actually on the state bench in South Dakota. So that's what got them involved, and essentially my dad just ran his mouth, and he got, you know, made a bunch of threats. He ran his mouth, and he got sent to Fort Worth, Texas, for another 18 months for pretty well, you know, not being a very nice prisoner to the niggers. And essentially, he got out a month here, and they were scared shitless of him here. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the government went ahead and killed my father. So I pretty well turned against, you know, the government when that happened. And I've been in the bowel movement since 1994. I was a militia leader. I was a one seed liner from Herbert Armstrong's church because I was raised in Herbert Armstrong's British Israelitism based church instead of dual seed line. And about 1997, 1998, I found out that dual seed line was more scientifically and scripturally correct, and I became dual seed line.
When you say the government killed your father, how did your father die?
Well, he died of a stroke. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just sort of like Connie Lynch. You know, he died a couple months after he got out of jail on trumped-up charges.
I got you.
Essentially, yeah. what they do, in many cases, they got chemicals, they put it in your food, and then you go in there, and while you're there, you're alive, and then when you're, you know, after you get out a little while, you end up, you know, your heart explodes, and you die. And that's been going on for some time, and that's how this regime goes ahead and murders our leaders.
Okay, and, so you were a truck driver. I'm trying to work our way toward your legal troubles. So
okay,
you,
well, I'm going on. What happens in 1994? I was a militia leader. I formed two militias, and unlike the lies of it, most of your militias in 1994 were small, by a dozen or so white men, and usually they had a Christian identity or Klan nucleus. And then you had all these suburban, militia, people come in, and they were surrounded by government infiltrators, and about the only one that's left, I think, of the militia movement is me and this character called Red Mike Vanderbo out of Alabama. He was in the news for telling, ignorant Whiggers to go ahead and throw bricks through Democrats' windows and shit like that. He got big news. Him and I hate each other, but anyway, I got a webpage, fairly early in 1996, and at about this time, I was learning. I got thrown in jail for 18 hours for questing Waco, and then I learned how to go ahead and file federal lawsuits. Ended up filing 6 of them, and some of them were election lawsuits. I was running for sheriff. In 1996, I ran for governor against the libertoons in Missouri's pet faggot, and J. Mark Oglesby, and they got mad, so they kicked me out of the Libertarian Party, had me thrown in jail for trespassing, for being invited to be kicked out illegally on my own, at my own lynch party, and I filed a number of lawsuits. I've lost every single one of them, but I filed the election lawsuits. And I have one going right now against Obama and Trader Glenn Miller, among other people. And essentially, the case is still alive because I found the procedures to go ahead and keep them alive. But you're not going to win a single case as on court. So, I've been convicted of not wearing a seatbelt. But essentially, I cost them $1,300 in order to collect $10 for me not wearing a seatbelt. I've been convicted of, quote, trespass, and essentially I didn't pay the fine on that. I got thrown 30 days in jail for contempt of court for not paying the fine of a bogus burned-out headlight.
Describe yourself physically. What's your height?
I'm 6 foot two, weigh 250 pounds. I got massive shoulders, but just like my father, I had osteomyelitis when I was 15. I got a very bad left hip here, so I walk with very much of a limp. So but on the other hand, I got massive arms and shoulders. I have met a number of people, Trader Glenn Miller, Alex Linder, Corn Cob, a number of them, and there's a lot of people think I'm insane. And then I'm a fairly good size, and I look, and I act like I just love nothing better to do than tear their heads off and shit down their necks. And there are a lot of people who are rather physically intimidated by me. Even people who are bigger than me, because I have a reputation for, being insane and being ruthless. So I'm, pretty well, I have brown hair. Right now I have half a beard growing on my left side of my face. And I could go ahead and get into detail on that. Pretty well, I have long hair. It's been growing since May 10th of 2005 when I got arrested. Now, I went ahead and...
How old are you?
I'm 52 years old. I was born December 25th, 1957. I think I'm about, a year or so older than you?
Yep.
Okay. So we're about the same age, and we're both alpha males, and we're pretty well about the same size. I think you're a little bit more fitter than me. But in any case, as a result of these lawsuits, I have caused a good deal of trouble. Now, when I used to run, in 2000, I ran as a reform candidate for United States Senator. Well, 1996, I ran for governor. 1998, I ran a grudge match against the Libertoons for United States Senator. 2000, I ran as a Reform Party candidate for United States Senator, and Pat Buchanan denounced me for racism.
Fuck, well, he Pat. Didn't like the hey, word. Hey, fuck Buchanan.
Pat Buchanan.
Let
Pat
him
Buchanan.
Drop fucking dead tonight. What do you say, Pastor?
Definitely. Well, that bastard went ahead and denounced me for racism, and all I did was go ahead and spell immigrant with a U.
Hey, fuck Pat and all those goddamn conservatives out there. What about that, Pastor Lindstedt?
Oh, I despise Republicans. It's Republicans that screwed me over worse than Democrats.
Yeah.
Unless it's libertoons. But the thing about it is, I got my revenge against old Pat Buchanan in 2001 when, I pretty well got this. I got this woman elected. I'm fairly good at political infighting.
How'd you get good at that?
Well, what I did is that I went ahead and downplayed what big racist I was, and there was a big split in 2000 between the Buchananites and the Perlbots. And pretty well, I got the Perlbots to go ahead and elect this nutty female. She was nutty as hell, but got her elected because she wasn't a Perlbot or a Buchananite. And then they immediately plotted against her, and she was sort of crazy. Her and this other woman in 1995 tried to talk me into going down to the Joplin FBI office and saying that I was John Doe number two. And I never met Timothy McVeigh, but I met and knew a number of people who were around Timothy McVeigh, including Reverend Bob Malone of Elohim City, and Dennis Mahan, who's in jail right now, and a number of people. And so I've been pretty well up to my neck peripherally, and I used to be in the 90s and early 2000s. I used to be one of Louis Beam's lieutenants.
What does that mean now? See, I'm not,
Louis,
yeah, what does that mean?
You've heard of Louis Beam, right?
I have
you've
heard of
Louis,
him. Yeah.
Right? Okay. Louis Beam, there's a lot of people wondering why he didn't become, Butler's successor. And the answer of it is of two things. One, he was already trying to get out of, the bowel movement because he sort of got tired. I mean, this movement wears people out in many cases. Alex Curtis, I used to, pretty well correspond with him.
He got set up. It's self-induced.
A lot of it's self-induced, but a lot of it is, these Jews end up hating your ass here, and they're out to get you. Louis Beam, from what I gather, he got charged with child molestation, and the charges were bogus, and he managed to get out from under them. But that's what they've been doing in order to go ahead and destroy. Story of white nationalists, not just white nationalists. 3 weeks ago, a predator went ahead and murdered a 14-year-old white girl, and people were whining about, well, how can you go ahead and justify, not keeping them locked up forever?
Okay, you were saying
the answer is there's 750,000 of them, and they range from the actual real perverts to people who are 21 years old who went ahead and just had oral sex with their girlfriend and now are in prison as child molesters for statutory sodomy. The system is out to destroy white males.
Yeah, okay. Now, go back to that thing about Lieutenant for Louis Beam. Now,
What happened is that Louis Beam did not give interviews, and I was writing and editing a newsletter called Modern Militiaman. And I pretend to be one seed line at the time. I was one seed line in order to go ahead and get along with this nigger named J.J. Johnson and a number of people in the militia movement, these suburban people who came in saying they weren't. And Louis Beam didn't give interviews. So when Timothy Veigh got convicted, somebody was trying to go ahead, and Louis Beam went ahead and referred him to me because he liked my webpage. I had a webpage ever since February of 1996 called Patrick Henry Online. And every single issue would have something slamming the constipation and the bill of goods. And that's why I was initially loved by the libertines. I used to write and print a paper zine called the Southwest Missouri Libertarian. I'd fight with the libertines over some of the stuff I wrote, like how to create a assault weapon, for $300 and feed Jeffrey Dahmer for a year. And people would get pissed off. And in one case, I was actually printing the terrorism anthology against Bill Clinton because I went ahead and pointed out that people had the right to revolt, whereas Bill Clinton, after Oklahoma City, said people didn't have the right to vote. So pretty well, I was a rising lieutenant. Louis Beam, if he wanted to go ahead, not do an interview, but he wanted to go ahead and point out what he wanted to do, he'd go ahead and ask me to do it. I still end up getting email.
What was the year?
It was as early as 1995 till about 2001 or 2002.
Okay, let me just be clear on your website. Are you saying you've had the same website ever since like 96 or so?
Well, yeah, it's the Patrick Henry Online. I never throw anything away.
Is that still your website?
Huh?
Is that still your website?
Well, it's at Monette, but usually you'll see the same thing at www.whitenationalist.org/Linstead, and my forum is at whitenationalist/forum.
Okay, and, just say that one more time slowly.
The main one. MasterLinstead.org is down because of some people bitching and dropping the dime on it. But my main website is whitenationalist.org. Mm-hmm. And from there, it goes ahead and leads to a number of things. Usually my personal website, slash Linstead. I have an FAEM, and I used to correspond with Robert Friends. And I know you did too. And
what was the substance of that correspondence?
Pretty well. Robert Friends, Eric Thompson does not like Chris Van Dente, but I used to publish Eric Thompson as well until I got thrown in jail in 2005. And Eric Thompson is just another of these people who hate Christianity and do not like Chris Van Dente at all because of their own little personal problems. Robert Friends was far more sanguine, and his colleague McGuire was actually fairly friendly to Chris Van Dente. And the best
who
the
is
best
this? Wait now. Who is Chris? I don't know this name. Who is that now?
McGuire.
No, Chris. What's that? Chris what? Chris Don Genji. What are you saying?
I guess. Never mind this. Chris. It was something that pretty well. I probably ought to speak more clearly, but I had four teeth knocked out by this damn pig, so sometimes
by
I
don't pig? Speak as clear. Pig? What, a policeman?
Yeah, Newton County pig. Slammed me into a sidewalk, knocked out four of my teeth, taking me out up to the nut house on December 6th, 2005.
Man, I tell you, this is going to be the toughest interview I ever did. I can't let you see the nut house and the charges. I want to get to that, but
okay, We'll get that. With Lewis Beam, introduced me to Katya Lane, who was David Lane's wife. So it was more of a political marriage, and she pretty well stuck with him until the cops and the rest of the harassment up in St. Marie's, Idaho, got too much for her, and she went ahead and sold her David Lane stuff to Billy Roper. And moved back to Secaucus, New Jersey. You see, I've been in the movement for 16 years. I've met Trader Glenn Miller. I've met Alex Linder. I met Corn Cobb. Craig Cobb. We call him Corn Cobb. He's a creator. We call him a creatard. I was fairly well acquainted with James Von Brunn. I'm fairly well acquainted with Edgar Steele, and me and Edgar do not see eye to eye, and he's been pissed off at me. He sent me a book, and pretty well, what do you think of it? And I said, well, Edgar, don't do a single thing for me, but you certainly whip up the Wiggers. And, in December 2008, I ended up giving him a nickname called, the Wigger Whimperer. I said, have you ever heard of the Horse Whisperer? Well, Edgar, you're the Wigger Whimperer. And
so, Pastor Linstead, am I to understand your speech that I hear? I hear something in your speech. Is that a function of you having been slammed by the police and them knocking your teeth out?
Well, it might be some of that, and it might be some of the fact that I guess I have a total. You have a better speaking voice than I do. Sometimes I don't recognize what I say. I mean, if you end up losing some teeth, you end up
sure.
Speaking
no, no, my, yo, yeah, I totally get that because my grandfather, he had teeth that he had to put in when he wanted, like a bridge, and when he didn't have that in there, he sounded different. So I understand now. But you were talking about Robert Friends and Eric Thompson and this McGuire and this
Robert Friends and McGuire and
what about this Chris though? I didn't catch that last name.
Well, Chris is something that probably came out that didn't mean to. I mean, I've known a few Chris's, but I didn't mean to say Chris. I'm trying to
I didn't understand. So, I don't recognize. I recognize.
I don't remember saying Chris either. So It don't really matter.
Okay. All right. So keep going. Now I'm trying to.
Well, what happened is that I've known quite a few people in the movement, and I've seen these. I call it the bowel movement myself. I've known Harold Covington. Harold Covington introduced him to me in 1998, and then we end up having a big falling out in 2000. And then what happens is that last year, when I'm working on my forum, I decided to go ahead and make peace and get him outside his little Yahoo groups ghetto and try to get him back into the mainstream. I was pretty well annoyed when you know, at him when you went ahead and interviewed him. He could name Kurt Lyons, he could name everybody, but he wouldn't go ahead and name me. I was a little bit annoyed at him. But essentially,
well, until better advice, Pastor, I have a better sense of you. Your speech is very deceptive. Now that I know you're 6'2 and 250 and a former truck driver, it's my sense that you can whip all them boys' asses. So I have a newfound respect for you there, Pastor.
Well, if I can catch them, I can. You know, usually it's sort of like Trader Glenn Miller. This is one good thing. See, Trader Glenn Miller, around 2000, when I was running for Reform Party chairman, I went ahead and got introduced, and there was a bunch of these people, and they're trying to go ahead and get Trader Glenn Miller back in the movement. And this lying bastard is still trying to go ahead and spy and lie on people. Ed met me and Roxy at this place, you know, cheap restaurant in Monette here, which gave good food for the price. And he was trying to go ahead and pay for our bill after we ate it. Now, well, this ain't weird. But anyway, I arranged for him to go ahead and meet me in my office at the foot of the hill at my mother's double wide. And what happens, I bought a brand new, you know, E-Machines computer from Sam and got a pretty good deal on the monitor. I said, you know, he was just yakking. He gave me a videotape, and he gave me his book, A White Man Speaks Out. And he was talking about all they did. And I was thought, well, you really need to get on the internet. You know, I use it to speak to Lewis Beam and Kathy Lane all the time. And, you know, Glenn Miller, he just sort of turned sort of greenish. He said, I was in the Federal Witness Protection Program, and nobody went to prison as a result of what I said.
I want to spend a good bit of time on your hatred of him. But just keep going chronologically here.
Well, he ran out. He ran out of my office here, and I was like, well, what the hell is that all about? And I went over there, and he was looking a whole lot better. And what happens is I talked to Lewis Beam, and I talked to Cat Jelaine, and I read his book, and then I figured out why he was so scared. He thought that I was toying with him. He thought I was toying with him, and I was going to pull out a 38 or something and plug that lying bastard. I mean, Trader Glenn Miller is a complete coward. Anyway, he went ahead and said, oh, the... You know, this was 4 years later. He said, well, the place stunk like shit and piss here. And I had to reveal that, no, it didn't smell like shit and piss. Because, A, I had the water shut off and it didn't smell like piss. Because, essentially, I have an asparagus patch. I had an asparagus patch. And what I'd do is I'd piss in these jugs, you know, in order to go ahead and pour over my asparagus. So, as a result, you know, I mean, there's probably more urine through these sealed jugs outside, because that's where he usually kept most of them. And so he was lying like hell. Then there was a whole bunch of jokes about Mad Marty and his asparagus patch. But essentially, I went ahead and I made the pitch to Lewis Beam after reading Chapter 3, to where Trader Glenn Miller ran like a yellow dog, you know, out at the Greensboro, North Carolina incident. He admits that he ran like a coward as soon as he could. I said, there should have been, back in the old days, there should have been some quality movement control to say, hey, look, this bastard ran out on us here when we were fighting for our lives against the niggers and Jew communists. You know, and never let that bastard in again. But instead, you know, Harold Covington let him in. And what happens is that a lot of people ended up being destroyed. Their lives being destroyed because of Trader Glenn Miller. And, you know, he's a complete, you know, I mean, I don't like, you know, I mean, I was in the Army, and I got to see quite a few drunken Anglo mestizos, as Eric Thompson calls them, you know, people with a little bit of red nigger blood in them, and they can't hold their liquor, and Trader Glenn Miller certainly couldn't, from what I've gathered, and he betrayed everybody. And I talked to Lewis Beam. I said, look, you know, Lewis Beam, and Captain Lane was a harder sell. You know, but I convinced them.
Speaking of holding your liquor, I've confessed and admitted to the world that I drink cold beer in the evening, and I'm about to go and get my second cold beer. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to play a tune that I have become fond of here over the last couple of days. Jimmy Dean died. I didn't even know he sang that song, but listen to this, and I'm going to go get me.
Big John.
Yeah, Big Bad John.
Go ahead, get your drink.
All right.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big Bad John. Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen. And a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land, Big John. Big Bad John. Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when a timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast, and everybody thought that they'd breathe their last, except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John. Big Bad John. And with all of his strength, he gave a mighty shove. Then a miner yelled out, "There's a light up above." And 20 men scrambled from a would-be grave. And now there's only one left down there to save, Big John. With jacks and timbers, they started back down. Then came that rumble way down in the ground. And the smoke and gas belched out of that mine. Everybody knew it was the end of the line for Big John. Big Bad John. Now they never reopened that worthless pit. They just placed a marble stand in front of it. These few words are written on that stand: at the bottom of this mine lies a big, big man, Big John. Big Bad John.
Big Bad John. Pastor, you like that song?
I liked it. What happens is occasionally my wife likes fixing me Jimmy Dean sausage here for biscuits and gravy. I'm not supposed to eat pork, but occasionally when I was locked up in the nut house in jail Fridays for some reason, they end up, you know, be it nut houses or jails, they end up serving sausage and gravy. Now, in the jails, it's usually just white bread butts that they save from the bologna sandwiches here. But, Jimmy Dean makes pretty good sausage. Mm-hmm. You know, and I did like, you know, he used to be, you know, he got in there here. But for my girl, he gave a pretty good value, at least as far as sausage did, and far as the rest of it here. And, yeah, I did like the song, but it's from a... What happens is that this world that he sang about, you know, and the way it's thought here, I mean, it's not the same world as it was 50 years ago.
Of course
not.
And
it's changing. It's changing for the worse.
It's a shithole now.
It's a complete shithole. Now, you know, pretty well we go ahead and explain that. But anyway, getting back to...
Your history.
Getting back to history with, with Trader Glenn Miller. What happens is I didn't reveal that part about him running out, except to a few, you know, people like Lewis Beam. It sort of made the, you know, what happens is that nobody who supports Trader Glenn Miller can ever expect to go ahead and get along with the people who love the order, you know, and certainly not with Christian Identity. I mean, if you're associated with Trader Glenn Miller, I mean, as far as, you know, everybody's concerned, you're a traitor and liar and fool. But
Pastor, let me just make a comment here. I don't have a dog in this fight, but if you said Trader Glenn Miller once, you've said it, I don't know, 10 or 15 times. Have you ever considered that it diminishes your credibility to harp on something? I may well do it myself.
No. See, the answer is, and the best thing was a thing, it used to be on the FAEM page. It's called, and this Jew came up with it, it's called mutual delegitimization. And pretty well, that's what Christian Identity does against the Jews. The Jews do not recognize Christian Identity. They know it, and they hate it. And the answer is that we are not trying to go ahead and get along. We are trying to go ahead and exterminate each other. So the answer of it is that they're, you know, we do not want peace. And essentially, pretty well, the sides are pretty well drawn. And my portion, at least of the movement, have been to go ahead and draw these sides to where, guess what? There is no peace. Now, the best movie I could go ahead and, you know, recommend, you know, when it's free on YouTube, is 1996's Michael Collins about the... you know, the hero of the Irish Revolution against the British, named Michael Collins. And he pretty well got set up by the little Jew, you know, Damon Evalera. But he didn't get killed by the British. He got killed by his own side in the Irish Civil War. And there's a civil war going on now, and it's going to go ahead and morph into the Great Tribulation. So as a result, there is nothing but contempt and hatred, you know, for myself and Trader Glenn Miller.
You must think he is an incredibly influential person and is doing great harm to the cause.
He's not doing great harm. In fact, my point to Lewis Beam and Catch a Lane was, let me pretend to be his friend for 4 years. And what he'll do is he'll go ahead, and I got a note from him, said, yes, Martin, you're my buddy here. Go ahead and put my book out on the internet. And I did. And I still got that note on my webpage. And pretty well what he'd do is he'd be trying to go ahead and suck up. And he still tries to rub.
Okay,
his
now let me get this straight now. You don't like him because he ran in North Carolina at that Greensboro fight.
No, I you know, what happens is he's a coward then. He should have been noted and avoided. What I hate about him is he went ahead and betrayed people, you know, who gave him money, like the order, and even people who didn't give him any money, like Pastor Richard Butler and Lewis Beam. They didn't have anything to do with him, and that lying bastard at Fort Smith went ahead and lied that they did. He was such a, I mean, maybe nobody went to prison because he was such an apparent liar that, you know, nobody believes him. And that's, you know, that's one of the
To hear your passion about him, I would almost think he wronged you personally, that somehow he injured you personally. How is he
injured? You know, he injures me personally by being alive and being a traitor. You can't, you know, like Michael Collins said, traitors and infiltrators are the death of movements like ours here. And, you know, the reason I am hated, you know, by that Stormfront, by David Duke and Don Black and, you know, Alex Lindner and the rest here, is as far as I'm concerned, I catch these people alive, I'm going to skin them alive and their entire families simply because they're traitors. It's not a personal thing. It's because they must die for their treason.
But when you start using language like that, aren't you concerned about uttering a threat? I mean, you know there are a lot of people being prosecuted right now for threatening other folks.
Well, that is, you know, generally what I pretty well tell. I tell these cops, you know, I mean, I have people. I go to Newton County. Well, I go anywhere. And usually, they're, you know, in Newton County, there's usually one, you know, one cop, And you sometimes there have been four here. And I said, okay, boys, are you going to follow me in the stall? Make sure I don't piss on the seat. I mean, there are people who are scared shitless of me. Now, I've seen women, they'll go on cell phone, they get all weak kneed, Marcellus is coming to the courtroom. You know, and what happens, there are people who are literally scared to death of me. And essentially what boils down to is that probably I am perceived as the most violent of what is usually regarded as a pretty violent bunch, you know, of Christian identity. And essentially, I've told people, you know, it isn't your little constitution, it isn't your bill of goods that keeps you people back. It's the fear of people like me coming to power and killing you all. And, you know, the thing about it is that Trader Glenn Miller, he didn't really know me. He just thought I was just some, you know, just some sort of little wigger here. But when I started talking about catching Lane and Lewis Beam, he thought I was toying with him. And I don't know. There is some stuff about me that, you know, I mean, I am, you know, I mean, I am physically imposing, and most people, you know, I've been known as being pretty sharp, and you know, there's a lot of people who think, you know, hey, you know, I'd probably kill him if I got a chance, and you know, try to get away with it, and I probably would. In any case, there are a lot of people, and I've been a hatchet man for Christian identity, and you know, probably I'm not hated as much as Harold Covington, but I'm hated nearly as much, and I'm feared a good deal.
Well, it seems your fear is invoked by your physical presence, whereas Mr. Covington, perhaps his writing skills make him more hated.
Well, no, I'm pretty well known very much for my writing skills as well. In fact,
Mr. Covington a tough guy too, like you?
No, he's totally different. The best show would be Radio Free Europe. The thing about it is that, you know, I mean, Harold Covington, it got so bad between us. He came up with his book in 2001 called Hill of the Ravens, and essentially he was saying that essentially the Christian identity, you know, the Christian identity would be doing most of the killing for his Northwest Republic, but we'd end up getting a Class C citizenship behind his Nazis. Now, since books have gotten better and better and better, but there are a lot of people in Christian identity who were very much annoyed, including me, Adam, and he went ahead and banned me from one of his list servers. Then he got somebody, to sign up as my name and had that guy say George of the Jungle about 20, 30 times. It was hilarious. But him and me have, you know, fought and tangled with each other. And last year I decided to go ahead and make peace with him. Even though by making peace with him, I couldn't go ahead and probably be friendly with Tom Metzger, because Tom Metzger can't stand, you know, Covington. Mm-hmm. See, I know all these people in the movement, and I've been, you know, some of them I've met, you know, personally, and a lot of them I've pretty well fought. And essentially, you know, I'm pretty well banned from the vast majority of the bowel movement.
Let's go back to the chronology you're giving us of your life here. Now, you're a lieutenant for Lewis Beam. You get mixed crossways with Glenn Miller, and you're mentioning FAM and Robert Friends. Now, and you say you corresponded with Robert Friends. What was the substance of that correspondence?
Well, toward the end of Robert Friends' life, he'd go ahead and announce that he was going to retire to the Batcave a couple times. And, essentially, we go ahead and ask him to reconsider. He died in May of 2003. And, pretty well his daughters, got rid of his library. And FAEM was really the best webpage ever in the history of the bowel movement.
I wouldn't be here, baby, if it weren't for Robert Friends and FAEM. That's how profound an impact it had on me. So,
they went ahead and, you know, at the time I was running, you know, I mean, I was running for governor and United States Senator. And when I was running for the small political parties, and I've seen, you know, your libertarians, your constitutional party, the rest of them here, they're pretty well infiltrated as well, and it's just by wiggers, white niggers. You want to go ahead and pretend to love niggers.
You mentioned Robert Frenz's daughters. I know nothing about his family. He told me he was related to Robert E. Lee, but I never knew anything other. You know, he died in May.
The last issue was May 13th of 2000.
What about his daughters now? His daughters,
they're just like Pastor Richard Butler's daughters. They didn't care for daddy's religion or faith or beliefs. And from what I get, his library is, you know, long since scattered. Eric Thompson, from what I get, is still alive. He's gotten a little bit more, you know, acerbic about Christian identity. But one of the things I used to do is I used to go ahead and publish resistance authors who got kicked off. Who got kicked off the mainstream Whigger. Right.
Now, see, this Eric Thompson fellow, is curious to me because I understand he doesn't use a computer. Is that still true?
He uses a typewriter, and he knows how to manually ink the things. And what he did is that I sent him $10 for postage. He'd go ahead and mail the stuff up to me up to the time I got thrown in jail. Now, what he'd do is he'd yell and holler about Christian identity, and I would not change a single word. But what I'd do is I'd just usually go ahead and underneath the web page, I'd go ahead and refute everything he said about Christian identity. You know, but
he use a telephone?
Christian identity has a bunch of
Pastor
provocateurs as well.
Pastor, does Eric Thompson use the telephone?
I don't think he even has a telephone.
Of all the people I'd love to interview, it's Eric Thompson. It's Thompson, right? Eric Thompson? Eric Thomas?
Well,
it's Eric Thompson.
Eric Thompson. As he likes telling us, his great grandparents was Charles Thompson, who was a Mason and one of the founding felons, and the only one who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
That. Yeah, I've heard that before.
And pretty well, if you watch National Treasure Number One, you know, you got to see his great ancestor, and you know, Mr. Thompson does not much care for Masons either. So,
do you communicate with him today still?
I pretty well lost contact after I got thrown in jail, and I've been meaning to go ahead and respond, but what I do is I go ahead and go to VNNF here. I got numerous sock puppets, and pretty well I just go ahead and take Eric Thompson's latest stuff, and I go ahead and post them on to my white nationalist forum.
Mm-hmm. And, let's keep going with your life history now. All right.
Okay.
Anyway,
I managed to convince, you know, Katya Lane was a harder thing because she was hysterical. She, you know, that evil man must never ever hear me allowed to do this or that. I said, well, look, he's probably being paid by Zog. He's spying anyway here. What happens is that what I want to do is that I want him to trust me and think I'm his buddy. And what I'll do is when these people come in, you know, these journalists and the rest who are asking about him call in, I'll tell them about Trader Glenn Miller's real history, you know, about running out at Greensboro, about snitching out, you know, at Fort Smith, being caught dead in 1986 with a, you know, drunk and pissing himself, you know, with a trailer full of guns and explosives, how he went ahead and ratted out the people who gave him money at the order, and pretty well make it, you know, quite clear that Trader Glenn Miller is not going to go ahead and get in the movement. And I had to put my foot down to a number of people. Well, he's such a nice guest. He's very engaging. And I say, look, you have him. You go ahead and have him after you know that he's gone ahead and done this stuff here. Why, said before here, there's only two people who go ahead and put up with Trader Glenn Miller, and that's fools and traitors, or both. And I had to set my foot down on even a few Christian identity people who should have known better. And pretty well, they just told me, okay, well, I won't have him on my, you know, podcast, or I won't have him on my show anymore. And essentially, with the reporters, I couldn't really threaten them like that. But essentially, I was pretty well Trader Glenn Miller and Trader Glenn Miller for about 4 years until 2004. And what happened then is I ran for governor against Matt Blunt. You know, I called him Runt Blunt. and as a Republican. And in 2002, I tried to get on the ballot as Martin Mad Dog Linson. I got on the ballot as a Republican, but Matt Blunt got elected. Matt Blunt got elected as a Secretary of State, and he wouldn't let me have that nickname. So I went ahead and sued the bastard in court. He got $49,000 from America Votes Act here. He spent it on saying, well, Secretary of State Matt Blunt wants you to go ahead and vote here. And I said, well, where's my $49,000, for my primary campaign saying Pastor Martin Linstead don't want you dirty niggers, Jews, or women to vote? Where's my $49,000 for that? And I went ahead and got a couple of the other Republican candidates, and we filed an ethics complaint against Matt Blunt, and that caused a lot of trouble.
Okay, I get the general sense. You have run for a lot of public offices. You filed a bunch of lawsuits, and you've been fighting with folks. You actually sound a lot like me. I've done a lot of the same stuff
right here
in Mississippi. All right. So, but let's go. Let's get to your legal problems.
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
I fought with Christian Identity people. Debbie Downey on Stormfront. Banned a bunch of dual seed line Christian Identity, and pretty well I found out that when she was married to the Washington State Grand Dragon, he let her, call herself Clayliff. And then I found out that after the Klan meeting, she was screwing all the Klan members, including her present husband, Mark Downey, who they called the Klud. So I went ahead and looked for some dirt here. And as a result of that, I pretty well told her, I said, look, you're not no Klan Clayliff. You're the Klan Klunt. And as a result, that nickname, pretty well stuck to her. And I'm banned from Stormfront for life here because... essentially Debbie Downey is a big buddy. But the thing about it is, you got to understand, the bowel movement is just loaded full of agent provocateurs and traitors and the rest.
Right.
Anyway, I pretend, so I fought with Christian Identity people. Like the other day, I was going ahead and going with Visser, and we can go ahead and get to that. But anyway, here I was running as a Republican, and in Missouri in 2000 and the rest of the elections, these elections were decided in 2000, 2002, and 2004 by less than a percentage of the vote. And my ticket in 2000 and the rest, I got this Jew to run against Ashcroft. So maybe I helped finish John Ashcroft as a U.S. senator. And I've waged a lot of political intrigue. But in 2004, I was trying to get Traitor Glenn Miller to run for United States Senator while I ran for governor, and I went ahead and said on VNN, yes, he's a treasonous, no good piece of shit, but he has money, probably from the order, and probably from Zog. And what happens is I need a racist to go ahead and firm up, U.S. Senate, because I can't run for Senate and governor at the same time. And what happens is that somebody snitched me out. I think it's either Wiggerswill, Will Williams, or Ron went ahead and knocked me out.
Ron, who is that?
One of David Duke's little ass clowns here, who's not supposed to support Traitor Glenn Miller.
Who is that?
Traitor Glenn,
What's his name again?
Ron Doggett.
Okay.
He used to be a organizer for David Duke's Euro. And the thing about it is that the old resistance, the one before Tom Metzger, the old resistance absolutely despises David Duke. I mean, I've had some people describe as that how David Duke is not only a thief, but he can't keep his pecker in his pocket. So it gets so bad that they hold a little meeting and they want David Duke to be a speaker, but they tell, hey, look, David, you're going to stay in the hotel room and we're going to go ahead and feed you cheeseburgers or room service or whatever, but you're not out of that room because we can't trust you around these donors, wives and daughters and sisters and mothers. And what happens, David Duke would just simply, okay, because he wanted the money too. He's a greedy bastard. And as a result, they knew all about David Duke, and essentially David Duke would go ahead and go along with this. David Duke is no brawler. You know what I mean? There's people still foaming at the mouth because he was noted for selling, secret clan lists, list servers or mailing lists. And they're still pissed that he sold this Republican named Bob Fowler, who became governor, the Klan mailing list as late as 1996. And they're, the old resistance absolutely despises, David Duke. But he got on Stormfront. He got his little flunky Donald Black. And, Stormfront is a little Zog, data mining false front. Same way as VNNF, and most of your major ones. Anyway, on the second Thursday, I went ahead, said, well, how can you be that here? Yeah, how can you say he's a piece of shit and you want him to go ahead and run for United States Senator? And, Glenn Miller would go ahead, and essentially what boiled down to is that my handlers won't let me do it. And what he would do is he still does today. As late as last year, or 2008, he hangs around the Ron Paul people. The Ron Paul people kicked him out. And he's got his daughters. He's got his daughters, trying to infiltrate the Ron Paul bunch here.
Who is this now? Who's doing this?
Trader Glenn Miller's white daughters. He has a. What happens is, what I make fun of him is that used to have these people named Albion who, all across these other list servers or forums which weren't there, and I end up calling Albion. I end up calling Albion, Rebanger. Albion, Linder Miller, Doggett. But in any case, in March of 2000, March 12th, the second Thursday, while I was watching Survivor, Trader Glenn Miller called me up, said, look, motherfucker, you've insulted my manhood. And I said, you don't have no manhood. You're a rat. But if you want, I'll come over. He lives 40 miles east of me. I'll come over some night, remove what little is left of your manhood with a dull knife and a bad attitude. Look, motherfucker. I said, hey, look, you called me. What do you want? And, I don't want you ever talk to me or call me again. I said, well, I guess that's apparent. Then he hung up. So, pretty well, 6 days later on March 18th, he went ahead and wrote a letter to Alex Linder and side of the story. It's still up on VNNF. Anyway, Alex Linder has never been able to go ahead and pay for himself. He was pretty well rescued from obscurity by William Pierce, who wanted to set up a second front. And William Pierce paid for VNNF here. And VNN, Vanguard News Network, in its prime, had the blessings of William Pierce. And you had quite a bit of authors. You had wonderful stuff that was being written. But when William Pierce died... And I've gone into that. Catch a Lane used to foam at the mouth about phone book Führers who got $400,000 from the order, who didn't help David, didn't help David Lane at all. And Pierce was pretty well disdained as an intellectual and a physical coward. But for my guy, he's the best business. And a lot, and pretty well the news is that he got $400,000 from the order money from the 3.1 or 3.6 million armored car robbery. And the order was pretty well a little bit over half Christian Identity, and then the rest was Robert Matthews and David Lane and Tom Metzger both used to be Richard Butler, Richard Butler's
missed. You seem to have a keen grasp on all this stuff. Can you tell me one more time what this thing called the order? What did they do? Was it just one crime they committed? I thought it was a series.
No. They essentially, and I sort of revere the order, but it didn't really, actually the money that they went ahead caused more trouble than what it was worth, other than exposing informants and liars. What they did is that Robert Matthews went ahead and read the Diaries. And Covington, he fumes about how, well, this is a crappy book written in series, and pretty well it's submitted. But the Turner Diaries didn't have very much in the way of characterization, but it sure as hell had one hell of a plot line. You know, the problem of it is that, like Robert Franz said, it really wasn't written by a professional revolutionary. It was written by, and pretty well, Franz and Thompson pretty well said is that, hey, National Alliance is just nothing more than the William, Pierce fan club, and William Pierce is just a bookseller. And he distanced himself from Robert Matthews and Timothy McVeigh. You know, I mean, he didn't want to go to prison for a long time. But
what did the order do?
Robert Matthews, was actually a hero. But and what he did is he had a good deal of leadership, and he went to Richard Butler's Aryan Nations Congresses, and he recruited a good deal of Christian Identity people. And what they did is that they first tried to knock over a porn store. Didn't do too well at that, but they got better and better and better.
A what store?
And a sort of Jewish porno store.
Porno store, okay.
One of the adult, adult rubber goods for the weekend, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, for my guy, they didn't do too well at that, and then they got a little bit better, and pretty well the biggest heist was either 3.1 or 3.6 knocking over a armored car. But two things happened.
Where was that? Where did that happen?
Northern California. I think it happened in 83 or 84. And what they did is they decided to go ahead and do it just like Joseph Stalin and the rest. They were going to go ahead and finance this white revolution. Sort of like Charles Manson was going to do the health thing here, have a race war. Well, they were going to finance the revolution. And they ended up giving a bunch of people money. They gave Don Gaiman, who lives 70 miles north of me, here $12,000 or $25,000. And Don Gaiman just wussied out. He was supposed to be a big Christian Identity minister. He wussied out. He went ahead and knocked against him at Fort Smith, Arkansas. And they gave Trader Glenn Miller $250,000. And Trader Glenn Miller drank it up, and he went ahead and he printed up all this, all these tabloids. He ended up getting a bunch of fools, about 300 of them at least. Well, I didn't see 300. I see about 100 or so of them to dress up in BDUs and do this other stuff. And they gave William Pierce $400,000. At least that was according to Catchalane and the rest of the rumors going on.
Did he tell
even,
him? Did
even,
he?
Even William Pierce's biographer in Fame of the Dead Man's Deed said Bobby Matthews went ahead and gave him a Franklin's, and it wasn't wood stoves. And the next day, Pierce went down and paid $90,000 cash and bought his farm in West Virginia. So pretty well what a lot of us have said is that the FBI knew about it, and they used that as a sort of a hook against Pierce. And some people, I'm pretty well saying is the reason Pierce went ahead and let his National Alliance fall into place is that the FBI probably went ahead and told him, look, we know you took the stolen money. If you go ahead and choose a responsible successor, and the best one he could have chosen was Billy Roper. If you go ahead and choose a responsible successor, you're going to go ahead and spend the rest of your month or two left alive before you croak of prostate cancer. You're going to go ahead and spend it in jail. And Pierce just pretty well caved. And there were a lot of people who thought that, it's just like Elohim City. And I did recently did an article about how William Pierce's compound was for creatards and cosmetologists what Elohim City was to Christian Identity. I got invited there, but Lewis Beam and Catchalane, I got invited by Bob Millar to go down there, but it was a known FBI listing, hold because, and they make a big deal about how Oklahoma City was plotted there. And, everybody knew that Bob Millar was talking, and they give him a hard time, but the fact of the matter is that essentially the FBI said, hey, you're going to be a listening hole, or you're going to end up being Waco-ized. And I guess he didn't believe in God enough here to where, hey, he wanted to live, and that's what he did here. So the movement has been infiltrated big time. But anyway, getting on after that thing with Trader Glenn Miller, Alex Linder goes ahead and accepts set of Butler's life. Butler made a big mistake three years ago.
Pastor, repeat that. Sometimes there's a gap, you know, because this is over the internet. There will be a moment of silence. Just back up a little bit and say that again.
Okay. Elohim City was a listening post because they did not want to be murdered. So the FBI has gone ahead and got a little clause either by coercion or by money or by order money. You know, in the case of Bob Matthews, the one who went ahead and betrayed him was this guy named Thomas Martinez, who was a Beaner or a Spick or something here from National Alliance. You know, but the second problem that Bobby Matthews made a mistake here, and this guy named Scutari used to be a Navy SEAL. You know, couldn't believe this, but Bobby Matthews left his pistol at the armored car knockoff, and that's why. Military, your pistols, your 45s, or I guess your 9mm too now, they have a lanyard. So what happens is that, on the butt of the pistol, is a loop, and it's tied by a leather or a cloth string to your pistol belt, so that guess what? You're not leaving that thing anywhere. And what happens, Bob Matthews went ahead and left his pistol there, but the main thing that went ahead and cracked it was this criminal named Martinez who went ahead and distributed counterfeit money, and he went ahead and he turned and he snitched, and then they were on the run, and Bobby Matthews got killed in FBI gun battle in Whidbey Island, I think, in 1984, and in any case, Trader Glenn Miller makes a big deal about rats. Some of the order did snitch here, but most of them that were Christian identity, like Bruce Pierce, David Lane. David Lane was tried three times, triple jeopardy, quadruple jeopardy. And he got 40 years, then 45 years, then 190 years. He died on Memorial Day in 2007. And Katja Lane, she got tired of being harassed, and she sold her stuff to Billy Roper. Well, after Pierce died, Linder, everybody made fun of Linder living in Granny's basement here because, Pierce didn't pay him that much. But after Linder died, Kevin Alfred Strom, he didn't want any competition. Well, bully boy Eric Liebe, he didn't much care for any intellectual pursuits. So essentially, Linder went ahead and drifted under Billy Roper. And Billy Roper, I don't all get trust. But Billy Roper is the smartest one of the lot and the most level-headed. And, Pierce should have, given his, organization to Billy Roper, but he didn't. Anyway, what ended up happening is that Roper, Katja Lane goes ahead and sells her David Lane stuff here. And David Lane and Trader Glenn Miller are enemies, everybody in the order. He not only snitched out, tried to snitch out the order people, but, a bunch of Christian Identity people like Lewis Beam and Richard Butler and Pastor Robert Miles, who didn't even give him any money, didn't have anything to do with it. And, the gravamen of the Fort Smith Sedition Trial of 1987-88 was you have about a dozen people who all hate the government and want to see it die. But what isn't believable is that you could go ahead and get more than five of them together without everyone trying to kill each other. I mean, if Trader Glenn Miller showed up at a rally with Christian Identity, there would be a riot. And so there's a lot of hatred. There is a lot of hatred. Some of it's rivalry. Some of it's religious hatred. And there's a lot of hatred in the movement. And what was not believable was that you could get five of them, in any one place, much less two dozen to plot to overthrow Zog without, them trying to kill each other. And so the jury, they said this case is crap. And it was crap. And they went ahead and overturned it. Well, Lewis Beam, he sort of learned a little bit from it. He wrote a thing called Leaderless Resistance, which has really always been the Christian Identity way. But that's what he's famous for, and mainly as the Leaderless Resistance. You have all these people whining about lone wolves and all this other sort of stuff. But anyway, pretty well you end up having the militia movement go on, and I was in on that, but what happens is that Glenn Miller is big buddies, you know, gets real big buddies with Alex Linder. And Alex Linder is not getting very well paid by Billy Roper. Billy Roper owns the vBulletin software, and Billy Roper owns the server. And pretty well what Billy Roper was trying to do is say, hey, you need to ditch Glenn Miller. And the reason you need to ditch Glenn Miller is I'm selling David Lane stuff, and David Lane's alive, and he's not having, you know, he's not wanting Trader Glenn Miller on a server run by Billy Roper to be anywhere on there. And he's showing Pastor Richard Butler, you know, going on the see Pastor Richard Butler before he croaks tour, because Butler lost his farm and he was surrounded by a number of, you know, criminals. And Butler made a big mistake in 1972 by allowing all these criminals, because he wanted a paramilitary army, and he ended up losing most of Wesley Swift's family member church. And as a result, he lost his farm to Morris Dees. And at the end of it, he was surrounded by people like Spring, who pretty well sell membership lists to the Aryan Nations, to the One People's Project. He was surrounded by traitors and Zogbots and snitches. And he died, you know, I think he died a horrible, lonely death here, all by himself, surrounded by Agent Provocateurs. But the good thing about Richard Butler doing that is, as a result, the Christian Identity Church, 99.999% of it is underground in small 1 and 2 and maybe even 3 family congregations. And my
Now I'm starting to get a sense of Christian Identity. So y'all totally aren't into politics, if I'm getting you right.
No, I'm probably the most political pastor in Christian Identity. A lot of Christian Identity, they know that Zog is going to be destroyed, but a lot of them just simply want to go ahead and just let Jesus do the heavy lifting and shoving. Someone like me, generally, I cause trouble. I cause mischief. I pretty well make the system look corrupt. I pretty well point out is that there is no thing that this regime needs to die. 140 million Uyghurs need to die, and all 150 million Jews and muds and cruds and niggers and beaners, they need to die. And what we end up need to have at the end of the Great Tribulation is about no more than 10 or 15 million white people, not Uyghurs, not white niggers, ruled by about maybe 10,000 warlords when Jesus Christ returns.
You know, I was thinking about the fact that there are many white people out there who are every bit, if not more, the enemy than the niggers and the Jews. I reference it in terms of a strictly legal political effort whereby we regain control of the government through elections, strictly legally. We build a big...
It's going to happen.
Okay, let me just finish my thought. We do that, and then we build a big-ass white wall. We stick all the niggers, Jews, and non-whites on that other side of that big-ass white wall, but we also stick those people over there on the other side of that big-ass white wall who love the niggers and Jews.
Wiggers.
Yeah, right. I've heard it so much, it just... Right. But listen, go ahead. I'm eager to keep telling your life.
I have a show. You know, what you call the white money movement, I call the bowel movement. Mm-hmm. And I have a show Sunday nights at 10 o'clock called The Movement Turd, because that's what a bowel movement produces. And pretty well I tell about all what these worthless bastards have done the past week and what Zog is doing. And pretty well I sent you an email. I predicted that Edgar Steele would not be allowed to make bail, and sure enough, I'm right. He's not.
Has the judge ordered to make bail? Has the judge ruled on that yet?
Yep. What happens? They're going to have a hearing in a week.
Yeah. Well, so it's still the judge has not ruled though.
The judge has ruled. They're going to have a hearing in a week. But the thing about it is I pointed out that if Edgar Steele was allowed to make bail, if he's smart, and I think he is smart, what he'd do is he'd end up having Mrs. Steele and mother-in-law Steele and all the Steele kiddies going ahead and driving with them and showing that they don't fear Edgar's plotting to, you know, knock them over for the insurance money. And
but Pastor, are you aware of recent news where the magistrate judge has denied Edgar Steele's bond?
I knew he would.
It's a woman, and I have not seen that yet. Are you saying
what happens is that I heard that, you know, bond would be decided. But what I said is that there's a case called Salerno International versus United States, where the United States Supreme Court ruled that, guess what, if they say that the person is a threat to the community or to himself, they can deny him bail. So in short, the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution and Bill of Goods don't mean jack shit.
But you're simply predicting that. You're not.
Well, I did predict it Sunday.
But again, I'm not aware, and I don't really think there is a ruling yet by the judge. I think it's before her. She's not ruled yet.
It's going to be ruled. It's going to be ruled within a week. But I predicted that he would not get out.
Right. You're saying it's going to happen. It hasn't. He hasn't lost yet.
Well, he hasn't got. Yes, but he hasn't got out yet.
No.
What happens is that even before he was indicted here, according to the federal rules of criminal procedure, they're supposed to go ahead and give him a bond. Well, what happens? They said no, and then you come up with all this white powder being sent. And then, you know, all these pipe bombs being found and all this other crap here. The thing about it is that they're going to go ahead and portray him as a dangerous maniac. Whereas, if they go, and there is an order that he is not allowed to speak to his own wife. And she doesn't like that. So, in short, they're assuming that he's automatically guilty and therefore a threat to his wife. So, they're already assuming something that has not been proven yet.
He made a very passionate appeal to the magistrate judge that resonated with me. He's sickly. He's volunteered to put an ankle monitor bracelet on him. He has strong, deep ties to the community. He enjoys a good reputation. I heard somebody up there in Sagal, Idaho, tell me that today. And somebody else, I think it was some reporter with a radio station up there, pointed out that, or somebody up there said the federal, when you're in federal court, they tend to let you go. So they may deny his bond, but maybe they're going to let him go. He may get out.
As a matter of law, they should not. They should have let him go out immediately. And if he was smart, what he'd do is that he'd end up having wifey poo and mother-in-law and kiddies. And essentially all you'd end up having is just, saying that I gave him $400.
Yeah, Pastor, how do you know that, though? I mean, is this conjecture on your part, or do you know Mrs. Steele?
No. See, I've been through the ringer. See, what they do is that they're supposed to, I have found my little constitutional and bill of goods rights don't mean jack crap.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and get to it.
Right. No disagreement from me on that. You're assumed guilty, and they push all that other stuff aside, and they keep your ass in jail. I get all that. But let's go back to a simple issue of guilt or innocence. Are you sure that that Edgar Steele is not guilty as charged? And if so, why?
Well, the answer of it is that he's presumed to be innocent. So therefore, you can't go ahead and say that since you go ahead and presume that he's going to be dangerous to his wife. That remains to be proven as a legal standpoint.
Okay, that's a theory. But I'm just saying you personally, you're not bound.
I don't think Edgar Steele did it at all.
Why?
Edgar Steele's really a pussy. In my view,
and a pipe bomb, somebody who hires somebody to kill your wife is a pussy. I mean, if you're not, you'd kill them yourself. You'd go, you'd kill the bitch yourself.
I probably would.
So I mean, that's exactly what a pussy would do. He would hire somebody else to do it.
But well, I just be what, better, hey bitch, I can't stand your ass.
When I look at him, I'm not reassured. I don't get a good warm and fuzzy when I look at Edgar Steele.
You don't like him, and what happens
me and him have
clashed.
It ain't that big a deal. I mean, I don't dislike him. It ain't like he's really hurt me or anything. I mean, just like with Richard Barrett, some people anyway, it's not that big a deal. I mean,
I hated Richard Barrett. Richard Barrett screwed me over.
Forget him. Oh. Let's stick with Edgar Steele.
Edgar Steele.
You think he didn't do it because he's a pussy?
Well, it really doesn't make sense. I mean, he's a lawyer. What he could have done is he could have, if he couldn't get along with the wife, I mean, he could have just gone ahead and got an ex parte order and rammed it on through, and, the bitch would have been left with nothing. The mother-in-law is, hitting the road. And, second of all, second Well, the amounts, you know, don't amount to much here. $25,000 ain't very much, and then $100,000 if it goes ahead and comes on through. That doesn't seem enough here, but you know the main thing is that Zog is the one who's going after him, and you know, like you were saying, I listened in to some of your show. You can't go ahead and see the entire account, even with Pacer. It's supposed to be open courts, but what happens? It's not open courts. My lawsuit against Obongo is closed by this new judge. People can't even read the thing, and so you know, Zog definitely has its finger on the scale. But even more to the point, let's say Edgar Steele was guilty. As far as I'm concerned, it's nothing to me. Edgar Steele, as I look at it, is on my side. So therefore, if he wants to go ahead and kill the bitch wife and the mother-in-law, you know, it's really nothing to me.
Mm-hmm. I hear you on that point. Okay, keep going in your biography here.
Okay. Let me see. Trader, what happens is that Billy Roper was selling, you know, was running around with Richard Butler, and he was, you know, selling David Lane stuff, so he couldn't have Trader Glenn Miller. He tried to get rid of Trader Glenn Miller, and then we come to the Christmas coup of 2004. 2 weeks before Christmas, Billy Roper went ahead and had the person who ran the server for him, some guy named Tom, and he just banned Trader Glenn Miller. Just banned his ass. And pretty well said, hey, you know, I mean, I've, you know, likened it to excising cancer.
Pastor Lindstedt, you might enjoy replying to an incoming email. This is someone who is obviously listening to you speak now, and they have sent this email in. The subject line is Lindstedt's opinion. Start. Dr. Pierce never had any connection to Tim McVeigh. Bob Matthews had been a National Alliance member before he started the Bruder Schweigen. Dr. Pierce later started that had tried to discourage Matthews from going illegal. The Turner Diaries was never supposed to be a blueprint for a revolution. The reviews of the novel that Mad Dog Lindstedt cites assume that it was that. It was primarily a representation of where certain trends in 1970s American society were leading. It presents the idea of resistance, but the way the white resistance wins in the end of the story is obviously a little far-fetched. Billy Roper was the first Big Ten approach that Dr. Pierce had always emphatically rejected. Lindstedt is entitled to his opinions, but they are just his opinions. Stop. That's it.
Is this by any chance by Will E. Williams, who I call Wiggerswill?
I have no idea who it's from.
Okay, well, it sounds like it's a you know. It don't really matter. I've heard the same crap here. Look, Pierce didn't want to go to jail, and so you know he loved Bob Matthews. The thing about it is that I've had the same thing, you know, people bitching about what I write. I had a fight with the Libertoons when I went ahead and advocated rape as a, you know, necessary tool of war. I got excommunicated by Maurice Gallet for going ahead and advocating the castration and the rape of the spawn of regime criminals and the use of prion poisoning. And, you know, I've had people whine about, how dare you advocate this ungodly means of warfare? And the point of the matter is that what you do is that, that in warfare, you meet and you destroy the enemy and you destroy his will to survive. And you go ahead and anybody who's on the other side, you exterminate. Now, I'm against going ahead and creating them as slaves. I think they're a whole lot less dangerous when they are dead. And even within Christian identity, I have people who think I'm a total psychotic madman. It don't really matter. It isn't me that's really going ahead and do it. It's just simply the way things are going to happen. A great tribulation is going to happen. Now, as far as Pierce is concerned, Robert Friend said that really he was not a revolutionary leader. He was actually a businessman and a very good one. And as far as the $400,000 was concerned, I think the order got probably the best investment that they ever got. Certainly a better investment than they got with Trader Glenn Miller and the rest of them. But the same people go ahead and support, you know, William Pierce is like this here. They support Trader Glenn Miller and they want to bring Trader Glenn Miller back in the movement. So if you you don't like my opinions, you don't have to read it. And it's because of opinions like that, I am not allowed on Stormfront, and I certainly am not allowed on VNNF. But going back to the Christmas coup at 2004, essentially it lasted for about 8 days, and it was known as the Christmas coup of 2004. And, you know, the first wave of refugees Roper went ahead, and I think Linder went ahead and bought a new vBulletin, you know, bought a new server, bought a new vBulletin thing. He went ahead and restored it, And essentially, Billy Roper went ahead and formed his own group, and essentially, Billy Roper made his point. Billy Roper is not a combative person here. He pretty well, you know, but he had to go ahead and essentially make an open break with Alex Linder. And pretty well in 2004, I'm convinced that, you know, Trader Glenn Miller is paying Alex Linder's stipend. And I point out is that Alex Linder has never been able to go ahead and make it on his own. And on your own show, there were people, you know, Alex Linder didn't like DOR because guess what? The money movement or the money was going to VOR and not Alex Linder. So, I met Alex Linder myself in Topeka in 2004 in May at the, anti-Brown thing. And, you know, Linder himself is a coward. After that here, he was talking to this little member of the European documentary crew about white nationalism in America. And somehow he got the idea that this little guy, two-thirds the size, was a Jew because he asked the question. Little guy said, yeah, yeah. And which is, you know, German for, well, I don't know it. You know, Germans are polite people, and they say "ja ja" instead of or "I think" or whatever. And they, you know, Linder acted like he was scared. And I was sitting there, and so was Billy Roper's right hand man at the time, Ben Vineyard. And Ben, you know, I was enjoying Linder, you know, look scared, you know. But Vineyard went ahead and said, "Well, you're not a Jew, are you?" And you know, the Swiss guy said, kind of Jew, which meant not a Jew. And then Linder, got that. Linder in person is actually 6'1" and looks Aryan. But you end up, you know, by his mannerisms, you end up seeing, you know, what I call a little gut, I pretty well call him a gut-sick little Guido weasel with Jew ass cancer. And him and I do not like each other. And, I was pretty well annoyed at you for interviewing old Fade the Butcher. You know, and you know, Fade is a little 5'2", little fat guy, and his picture got revealed a couple of days ago.
Who is that? Who is Fade the Butcher? Who are you talking
about?
Well,
he calls himself Hunter Wallace here, I'm on his forum. Fade's the one good thing that Fade's good at.
The boy from Alabama?
Little fat boy from Alabama. Now he's up in Virginia. And Fade, sometimes when he pisses me off, I call him Cuntair. You know, Cuntair! Cuntair! And I have a little picture is that, you know, he sort of trusts me. I was one of the, you know, after I got kicked off of Linder's forum after the Christmas coup, Linder was mad as hell at me and Covington for piling on against Trader Glenn Miller. You know, pretty well say he's a rat, he's a traitor, and, you know, so are you for accepting money for him. And pretty well he didn't overtly ban me, but what he did is he went ahead and changed the password so I couldn't log on no more. So I went ahead and went to Fade the Butcher's the Fora, which I end up calling Fora Fags Thieves, and pretty well the Lindstedisms are, you know, pretty well common throughout the movement. But Fade the Butcher's, you know, benefit he has been, he's always been able to go ahead and get all these little college intellectuals around him and running particular forums. And that's what he's good at. But 2 days ago, he ended up actually showing a set of nuts. And he went ahead and confronted this little Jew that closed down the American Renaissance thing in Washington, D.C. So he did show a pair here. But, what happens is the Fade's sort of a complex, person here. But I was annoyed, because I'd asked for an interview, and what happens is Alex Linder went ahead and dropped a dime on Bill White on December 15th of 2009 in order to go ahead and cover up the fact that essentially he was data mining, because he knew, you know, I don't like Bill White. I think he's a Jew. You know, there's people call him Bill Weiss, and I've believe that he is. But essentially, he's just another Hal Turner, you know, just another rat who's, you know, being ground up through the, you know, through the works. And Alex Linder went ahead and testified against Bill White on December 15th, 2009. And then, in order to cover it up, he was coming up with this other stupid crap, this guy named Greg Johnson, who a lot of people never heard of.
Wait. Before you go beyond that, it was my understanding all Alex did was provide IPs confirming that Bill White, you know, posted.
Then what? Well, then why do you need to come? You know, that's exactly my point. Why, you know, he banned Bill White, and what he should have done, is he should have just gone ahead and erased Bill White's name, especially, you know, and email address, especially after he banned him and there was no need for him to get back on, and especially after he heard Bill White was going, you know, got arrested in Chicago, and then after the Chicago charges fell apart, he should have gone ahead and deleted his name. And pretty well, I went ahead and made a big deal that there was no need for him to go ahead and know. Now, see, the NSA knows who you are, but, you know, as a result of Alex Linder giving that testimony, he went ahead and tied Bill White to the alleged crimes. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, as a result, you know, I sort of think VNNF is a Zog false front. It's a data mining operation. And that's pretty well my reason. But
data mining, what do you mean there?
Well, pretty well, what happens is that they're going ahead. It's sort of like Trader Glenn Miller's literature campaign. For example, before the advent of the internet, I used to go ahead and publish a double-sided 10-page newsletter called the Southwestern Missouri Libertarian. And some of the stuff, you know, I've reused over the years. It was 5 double-sided pages because that's exactly how much you send using a 1-cent stamp. And what happens is Trader Glenn Miller ends up going ahead and spending $20 once a year for this Aryan alternative stuff, what I call literature, because what they do is they spread it like litter upon a Whigger or a nigger or a Jew's yard, and then there's a bunch of big stink, and the whole purpose is to go ahead and get people to go ahead and find out about this, you know, to go ahead and then call the ADL. And that's the same thing I say about Gerald O'Brien and Paul Mullett's little Aryan Nations thing. I wouldn't be surprised if, Morris Dees goes ahead and sends them, okay, Gerald, here's your $100 for some flyers. I want you to print them up and then spread them on Jew's yard so we can go ahead and get, you know, one shekel will go ahead and return 666 to save us from these awful, evil Aryan nations who want to put a Jew in the oven.
All right. Now, all right. Pastor, I like you already. Okay. But listen, I got 30 minutes left in me, and I haven't even eaten supper yet. We're going to have to do a part two to this interview. The last 30 minutes, so we got about I got about 30 minutes left in me in this part one.
About the child molestation.
I want to get to your legal problems in this first one, so let's get there.
Okay, getting to there. Here I am fighting. I'm running as a Republican candidate for the United States Senator, causing Matt Blunt a whole bunch of trouble. And essentially when I'm running, I'm trying to go ahead and strip votes away from these elections, which are decided by a fraction of 1%, away from Jim Talent, away from Matt Blunt, and I'm causing a lot of trouble. And most of these parties are, you know. So anyway, I'm filing lawsuits, and what ended up happening is that they were, you know, pretty well Newton County. He was, you know, pretty well Missouri was out to pretty well get me. Okay, in the meantime, what happens is that me and, you know, I went ahead and hooked up with Roxy because she was fixed and couldn't have any children, and, you know, at the age, I wanted to meet some pussy here without having to, you know, but then again, she couldn't have any children. And I have a stepdaughter named Emily who's a big, fat, ignorant welfare slut. And what she did is that she got pregnant by her boyfriend at the time, and she found a little, you know, a little idiot, you know, 85 IQ with a grin, a stupid grin like George Bush, you know, that she thought she could dominate. And she had my first granddaughter, you know, named Helen in 1996. And at that time, I bought this house for $3,000 and fixed it up. And so she had had she went ahead and, you know, she didn't want to go ahead and take care of Helen, so Roxy ended up going ahead and taking care of her. And then later on, you know, her first husband had a child, you know, and, you know, named Malachi Adam. And the kid, you know, the kid is sort of stubborn, but he's like his father. He's a child of his father. He's sort of dumb, you know, just like old Sean. But Sean, he gets tired of essentially Emily telling him what to do, and he decides to grow him a pair. And Emily gets all pissed off, and she decides to get her a job working over at Ramey's. And then people said, "Well, why is she working over at Ramey's?" I said, "Well, she's working at the meat department. She's looking for a tube steak and trouser trout." And she was screwing a whole bunch of people, and I knew this marriage wouldn't last very long. And you know, essentially, I made a mistake, and I went ahead and bailed Emily out of jail for her selling alcohol to a minor. It was set up by the Granby Pigs. And, you know, at the meantime, I'm fighting with these Granby Pigs over, you know, over. I mean, we're having, you know, I'm going down to city council, and we're having, you know, what I call pig lice and council critter riots, to where they're mad as hell what I'm telling them. And, you know, they end up assaulting me, and then I end up beating the shit out of them, and then I get thrown in jail as the one who started the riot, and then the cases fall apart when it's revealed that they're the ones who started it. And anyway, I'm fighting with Granby, I'm fighting with Newton County, I'm fighting with everybody in the state of Missouri. And, anyway, she ends up having two kids. And
when you say she, now who are you referring to?
My stepdaughter, Emily, you
okay.
know, who
okay.
I also call Fat Ass. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you know, I ended up coining the term meerkat because her first husband wasn't what it called a meerkat. A meerkat is a pussy whoop dolt, and that's just like one of these little animals whose little head bobs around outside his wife's or girlfriend's vagina here, and that's where he lives. He's just stuck up her cunt, and his little head just bobs around, you know, like a freaking idiot, you know, on the. I don't know if you ever watched Meerkat Manor or anything like that here, but
never heard
you know,
of
that's
that.
Why I call them little meerkats, little animals, sort of like a little weasel here who, you know, are sort of frantic here, and they're a little hit, you know, that's another Lindsteadism. Anyway, she divorces her second husband. She ends up going ahead and getting a series of boyfriends, and I pretty well say, hey, look, this is, you know, this place across the street is where, you know, that I had my brother buy, and Sean ended up paying $100, you know, $100 a month toward the $5,000, he was going to go ahead and get the house, and, you know, the property was going to be divided across the street. And I said, look, this place is supposed to be the place where our grandchildren are raised, not Emily's pussy palace. And pretty well, I get my brother at the time to go ahead and agree that I'm the one who's in control. Once Sean goes ahead and he gets tired of her whoring ways, he grabs the kids, and then I end up having them taken back on a protection order. You know, I mean, you know, Sean was an idiot, and, you know, but he's the one I liked the best, but, he was sort of, you know, he liked doing stuff like throwing his kid up in the air and then, quote, forgetting to catch him here, you know, stupid crap like that. But anyway, you know, I got, you know, she'd go ahead, and I said, hey, no niggers, no beaners. I mean, I'm not going to have no nigger or beaner grandkids, and I wouldn't allow her to screw. So she was going over to Neosho and screwing, you know, this other idiot named James Baldwin, and she was taking the youngest kid, and he was sitting in a car seat and pissing his diaper and getting diaper rash. So I said, okay, I'll allow the little bastard to come over here rather than you risk the life of my youngest at the time grandchildren. So she went ahead and squeezed out two more children, and one of them, JJ, was just like you know, he's an idiot like his father. And the youngest one, I went ahead and considered a changeling because, you know, the kid, you know, is smarter than Emily and smarter than, you know, this other idiot here. I said, well, maybe something, I mean, about the most beautiful kid I ever seen. The damn beaners couldn't, he looked like an angel boy. But anyway, in 2000, you know, this idiot goes ahead and gets mad and he kicks Adam in the mouth. And they get taken away for a month, and, you know, they're scared to death because I make it a big deal. And in Missouri, at the time, you only had 24. Once they took the kids, you only had a 24% chance of getting them back. They steal white kids. This system is set to steal white kids from poor families or from families who are politically incorrect. And that's why I advocate exterminating every single psychiatrist, every single social worker. You destroy a white family, your own family is destroyed. But I managed to go ahead and get them back, and I was causing trouble. And my brother and I, we used to be sort of close, but he's turned out to be a treasonous Whigger. My sister was trying to steal money from the state. She managed to go ahead and make off with $110,000 of it before we went ahead, and I sided with my brother Mike to go ahead and get rid of her and the lawyer that was running, because she'd sent my mom, who ain't too smart, to a nursing home. So I went ahead and sided with my brother Mike. And my brother Mike, I knew they always didn't much care for my dad. He loved my father, but he loves money more. And in 2001, we went up there to fix fence, that'd been burned out in the worst fire in South Dakota. He went ahead and told me he was glad the government sent my dad to prison. And, the fight was on. And essentially, he was changing the deal to where I had to repay for the building materials used for the fence. And we had a big old fight. And he got more and more and more psychotic. And he's one of the people, he told me last month, that he'd wish the government had kept me locked up in the nut house. And I said, I heard you said that here. It's a shame that our father didn't go ahead and live long enough to hear a traitor like you. And essentially, it's not all good blood. Your own blood can be no good, worthless traitors, who are better off dead. And, I've had it happen in my own family. Worthless, treacherous Whiggers. But anyway, what happens is that part of his little spiel when he got mad at me is he went ahead and broke the deal to where I'd control the house across the street. And here comes Emily invite every bit of white trash vermin, to go ahead and live with her. And one of them was a relative of my wife. And essentially, he was shacking up with a 14-year-old girl. And essentially, he was, having to have the police call out a couple times. And they just pretty well told him, hey, look, if you go ahead and drop the nickel that, one of the kids are complaining that Martin's molesting them, we'll go ahead and overlook all your crimes. Well, he ended up going to prison for his, numerous crimes because he's just a little Anglo-Mestizo criminal. But at the meantime, Emily gets rid of her first husband and then her second husband gets a new boyfriend. This boyfriend goes ahead and molests Helen. And, oh, by the way, in 2000, she went ahead and invited the second husband's father, Luther Baldwin, to come over. He molests Helen. And pretty well, Bill Dobbs and Scott Watson say, well, we can't prosecute Looper. He won't make it in jail. He's too dumb. And this bitch goes ahead and they go ahead and pass it. And then they go ahead and seal the record. And I say, you people don't have anything wrong with child molestation. Well, anyway, on April 9th, I go over there around 2:30. The two oldest grandchildren that spend the night. Because it's going to be Easter Sunday.
2:30 in the afternoon or morning?
In the afternoon. Mm-hmm. In the afternoon. They come over, and here are the Newton County bunch, and they, Newton County and the Granby pigs, and essentially, we want to talk to you. I said, what about? You're alleged to go ahead and molest your grandson. I have a copy of the thing here. And essentially, they went ahead and took him, and this old enemy of mine named Kevin Lee Selby. He's the one who ended up having me 30 days, in jail on burnout headlight fee. And the bastard, he's a vindictive little sociopathic judge. And essentially, I got thrown in jail simply for trying to videotape, public affairs, or what was going on in the courtroom. And I went ahead and hired a lawyer, and that lawyer wasn't allowed to represent my wife. I went ahead, and he wouldn't allow me to go ahead, and there was a case, after 2009 until 2005, to where I was trying to get this judge removed because he hated my guts, and he didn't allow this lawyer to go ahead and intervene on the case of grandparents' rights, and the Missouri Supreme Court, lied. What happens is that they went ahead and presented the case to where I had to go ahead and get the final judgment. And this is what these crooked judges do. They go ahead and they make a ruling, and then you have 10 days to appeal it, but they refuse to go ahead and sign the final judgment order. So then, even if you go ahead and fight it to an appeal, you still go ahead and lose because they say the judge didn't sign the final order. I mean, this is the crookedness of the system.
Yeah,
and pretty well the little criminal who went ahead and came across said, "Well, Martin, pretty well they offered me immunity for my crimes, and you know that you get the kids back if we go ahead and testify that you were molesting, you know, all your grandchildren." And after about 2 or 3 months here, they got, you know, the weak-minded little middle boy, Adam, you know, supposedly, you know, and it's on my webpage at whitenationalist.com/Linstead/Naboth, NABOTH21.html, you know, about the reasons that they went ahead and removed me. And essentially for, you know, 13 months, here I was, filing suit, and they were trying to go ahead and break up our families and say, if you go ahead and leave, why, we won't go ahead and do this.
Pastor, let me ask you this. Did you ever molest any of those children?
No, I never molested. I never went ahead and kissed my grandson's penis anytime. You know,
Who said you did molest those children?
Well, what happens is this is third-hand hearsay. See, a policeman named Kevin A. Young said that Tracy Voorhees, a therapist, revealed that Malachi went ahead and claimed that I kissed his penis sometime a couple months after they went ahead and got control of the children. Now, that was a violation because according to the law, which passed in 2004...
Listen, I don't care about what those fucking psychiatrists and social workers have to say. We ain't never going to get anywhere with the crowd out there who believes in psychiatrists and counselors. I'm just asking you man to man, did you do any of that stuff you were charged with?
No, I didn't do any of it.
That's all I need to hear. Now, let's go on to the next thing, and that is this nut house thing.
Okay, well, going on. What happens is that here I am. I've been suing these people. I mean, they're scared shitless about facing me in court or anything like that. And so 13 months after, on May 10th, they go ahead and arrest me. They won't show me the arrest warrant. They won't show me anything. They just go ahead and they, you know, slap the handcuffs on, put me in jail, tell all the other inmates I'm a chomo. What happens is that you end up having almost these niggers and the rest of them who are rioting try to enter my cell to beat me up and kill me, and they let this shit go on, and I'm insisted on being my own lawyer. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to go ahead and have a little video conference to where, oh, my grandson is so traumatized by my evil ways. You know, I mean, I asked them, well, how can you prove that I did or did not kiss my grandson's penis when there's no physical evidence? Certainly not 13 months after the fact. So the first day when it comes time,
Pastor, you know, let me just stop you. Right, you know, it's a big coincidence. There's a psychiatrist, a psychiatric facility here near to where I live in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah,
that is literally responsible for the death of a guy. He was having marital problems, and he went to this counselor, the psychiatrist. And he mouthed off something like, I'm going to come back and blow your head off. Well, you know how it is when you have marital problems. Rather than them try to work with him, anyway, they end up calling the police, and the police go out there, and he ends up dead. Now,
yeah.
They say he killed himself.
I heard that show.
So I have nothing for these psychiatrists.
Well, I have even less because I was sent there illegally and dope. See, I insist on being my own lawyer. I got a change in judge from the little faggot judge to my old enemy who I'm suing at the time, Kevin Lee Selby. And on the 23rd, he goes ahead and gives me 22 counts of contempt of court illegally because I will not be represented by a public pretender. And I said, look, Timothy VeVey had a lawyer. Guess where it got him? I do not want any lawyer because, you know, part of the reason of it is if I go ahead and get a lawyer, they're going to be able to go ahead and use this videotaped evidence, and I'm not going to be able to go ahead and face my grandson in open court and have him say, no, Papa didn't do it. So as a result, you know, this,
Did you ever get to that point?
This particular judge wouldn't go ahead and allow me to, he went ahead and gave contempt of court. Meanwhile, the public pretender's office, they're saying, hey, the man has property in Newton County. He has property in South Dakota. We're not eligible for it. So he says, well, we're going to go, you know, he goes ahead and he assigns me one. Then he has to go ahead and backtrack because the public pretender's are going to go ahead, office is going to sue him. So what he does is that he's going to go ahead and hold a an indigency hearing, but instead what he's going to do is and I got told by Ken Copeland, don't you go ahead and cause trouble like you did last time here, or we're just going to take you out and you know the judge is going to go ahead and have a psychiatric evaluation demanded, and under Revised Statute of Missouri 522.020 is what he went ahead and done. And on August 5th, I went ahead, and there was this little Jew medical student here. And I said, what if I refuse to say a damn thing to you? Well, then you'll just go ahead and stay in jail until you feel like talking to me. Okay, you worthless bastard. And I went ahead and talked and talked and talked. And the little bastard went ahead and said I was, nuts as hell. But I was nuts from psychotic disorder not otherwise specified. And this little mud psychiatrist named Mandratria went ahead and signed off on it. Okay, so it comes back September 13th, and what happens is I'm not allowed to go ahead and show up in court.
I understand.
According to law, I was supposed to be able to get a copy of that psychiatric report and challenge it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, the Selby wouldn't even let me see the damn thing, much less challenge it, and there's a gag order. And that is for, and so I got sent up to the nut house, and on the way up there, damn pig, while I was shackled, shoved me twice into a sidewalk, broke out four of my teeth, scraped me up real bad.
Who did that?
Oh, this piece of shit named Don Hunt here, along with this guy named Sullivan, transporting me up there, and the pigs know about it, but they can and what happens at the nut house? I demanded that the Callaway County Sheriff's Department at Fulton go ahead and investigate and put those pigs in jail for an investigation of how in the hell did this man look? How did he get four teeth broken off? Look like he'd been dragged behind the cop car. And they refused to do that. And, at the nut house, this nigger psychiatrist, Alicia Thompson, went ahead and illegally insisted that I be doped up. And then I said, well, hey, it's against my religion. And then this Catholic bitch named James Smith went ahead and held an illegal little council, and then went ahead and said that, he's not a member of a recognized, state or recognized religion, which was contrary to law.
Listen, Pastor, I want to try to get an interview with Don Hunt. Now, where would I reach him?
He's a Newton County pig.
Okay, Newton County, Missouri.
Missouri, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Look up on the webpage. What happens is that. It was pretty well recognized here. I mean, pretty well. I ran against Copeland in 2004.
And his name is Don Hunt.
Well, that's what I was told it was here.
Newton County, Missouri Police.
Yeah, he shoved me into a sidewalk at the Express Mark off of Interstate 44 at 7:12 a.m. December 6th, 2005, and broke out four of my teeth.
Were you handcuffed?
Yeah, I was shackled. I have a bad leg.
How big a man is he?
Oh, it didn't matter. He was behind me, and I was shackled.
Yeah, but I'm asking.
I actually gave my balance.
I'm asking how big a man.
He's probably about 5'8 or so.
Uh-huh.
Just a big, fat, evil piece of shit pig. Mm-hmm. And essentially, you go up there. And essentially, in order to go ahead and keep me jailed, they had to pretend that I was dangerous, and thus I had to be kept at maximum security and doped up. So that kept me there for 2.5 years until 2 years were over. And a new psychiatrist named Jason Kafer went ahead and talked him out of the illegal doping. And as a result, once the illegal doping ended, there was no excuse for me to remain up in Fulton.
Were you resisting? Why did he shove you? Were you resisting? I mean,
No. I made fun of him. He was talking about being big bad pig here, and I said, "Well, look, who's the superior here?" And the answer was Sullivan was the superior. So I said, well, hey, you just ain't the big pig you think you are. Oh, he got mad as hell at that. And when we was going out there, he shoved me once, and I managed to go ahead and maintain my balance as I was trying to go ahead and get up. He shoved me a second time right into a sidewalk and broke out four of my teeth.
Did he file a report contradicting?
Oh, he claimed I was trying to escape here. Here I am. You know, the only man in, well, there was another man in Missouri I met at the nut house with half a beard, but the only one, you know, who, I was shackled. You know, how's I going to go ahead and escape? I have a bad limp. I could not run him, even if I wasn't shackled.
At the feet, your feet were shackled, is what you were saying.
Well, my feet, you know, that's, you know, my feet, my, you know, my wrists. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't even protect my face here. And that's what pigs do. And they think they're going to go ahead and cover it up. And I made complaint after complaint after complaint. But they did it here. And, you know, I've told pigs. I said, for what that pig did, when it comes time for you suffer, you know, I've told these people, you know, the DSM-5, you know, 6, I don't know what 5 is going to consist of, but 6 will have just one page, and it'll be called Pig Lice Testicle Eating Syndrome. One psychiatric resistance, and the only cure is to go ahead and let nature take its course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, look, I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, every single policeman, every single government worker, every single politician, every single lawyer, every single judge and their family needs to be put to death and sent screaming to hell. And I swore an oath on April 9th, 2009, that I would do my best to make sure that everyone who goes ahead and runs this current social order would go ahead and die, and I'd send them and their family screaming to hell. And I'm not a man who's going to be forsworn.
All right. Is most of your anger rooted in them alleging that you were a child molester and breaking your teeth out? Is that where your
No. What happens is that, you know, I'm a rather cold-blooded individual. The thing about it is that, you know, this is what they do. They did it to Louis Beam. They did it way back in the 30s against the leader of the Silver Shirts. They do this thing, and it's just like what happened in Ahab's day. And I have a sermon called House of Ahab. And among the Israelites, an ordinary criminal was simply executed for his crimes. But a regime criminal, anyone who supported a criminal regime, not only he was guilty of a crime, but his entire family unto four generations. If you go ahead and use the power of the state to go ahead and get your way unlawfully, you are a regime criminal and a traitor. And until this population learns that you do not use the government to go ahead and not mind your own business and not go ahead and steal.
All right, let me real quick, because I'll remember this until the next part two. But what you seem to disagree with my strictly legal political campaigns. What's your strategy for?
My strict political strategy is there's no gainsaying the Great Tribulation. I have a little sign in front of me, you know, on top of my TV next to my laptop saying don't fuck with the Great Tribulation.
What is the Great Tribulation? What is that?
What it is, it's forecast by Jesus Christ in that there would be a great tribulation such as never was and never will be again. Unless Jesus Christ returned, no flesh should be saved. Now, most Christian identity believe in just letting things fall apart. That's, you know, most of the movement.
So you're talking about the revelation and the second coming of Jesus Christ. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Okay. What happens is I actually believe. And, you know, I actually believe, I guess you could say I believe my own bullshit. But the thing about it is that I'm by far the most, well, I guess I'm by far the most political of the Christian identity pastors. And, you know, some people say the profane. But in any case, what happened is that, you know, after spending some more time in jail, and this lawyer, you know, I pretend to hire a lawyer and I pay him $1,700. And the bastard pretty well was out to screw me. And then I refused to go ahead and accept him once I was out of the nut house. And the judge had no choice but to go ahead and let me be my own attorney. And then once I was my own attorney, I want to go ahead and have the law. I want to go ahead and look at the law books. And, oh no, that's going to go ahead and cost me $10,000 extra. I'm going to have to hire two more pigs to, you know, escort him to there. I said, you're going to have to escort more than that, because if I'm allowed to have my own lawyer, all these other people, they're going to ditch their public pretenders too, and they're going to demand to be their own lawyers. And that's exactly what was happening.
Pastor, so, I've got an email, and let's conclude on this one, and then I'll get you back here real quick, if not tomorrow evening, one evening real soon. This email states as follows. That the party is asking, what are your sources of income and state?
I got 10,000 guaranteed income from an inheritance.
Okay, now that's per year?
Per year.
Yep. And then they say his common law wife, Roxy Fosnot, I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that right, is apparently one source, so stated in his own writings. Does he have any other sources of income? Does he contribute to his own maintenance?
The answer is I contribute. You know, she has her money. I have my own money. Now, the thing about it is that here are all these wiggers, and they sort of assume that if somebody's getting money from the government that, you know, that they own or they have a claim from the government to whatever these people, you know, make here. And essentially, the government assumes that it owns poor, you know, it owns the children of poor people because they go ahead and get welfare. Now, welfare for the poor is recognized in the Bible, and therefore there's nothing wrong with it. You know, the thing about it is going ahead and giving money to niggers and beaners and the rest of these, you know, dirty muds who never can go ahead and pay it back. But in any case, you know, getting back, once I was able to go ahead and get a lawyer, they decide to go ahead and reduce my bond from $100,000. And guess what? People committed five times the alleged crimes here was only paying $25,000. It got reduced to $10,000 cash bond. And then on February 27th, 2009, the case was dismissed. The case had to be dismissed because essentially, well, the witness won't go ahead and prosecute. I said, no. So in other words, my grandson told you bastards he's not going to go ahead and lie for you. And they couldn't respond to that. But what it boiled down to is that, guess what? You know, when first came time to prove their case at the preliminary hearing, they couldn't prove jack shit because my grandson refused to go ahead and lie about it. You know what I mean? And he's been treated, I've heard, very, 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 very badly.
By who?
I have no mercy on
treated
this evil
badly
bastard.
Treated badly by who?
Well, what happens is that, you know, the poor kid wasn't too smart to begin with here. And then, you know, they tried to fill his head that I'd molested him here. And essentially, he beat the crap out of a couple of foster parents. And they sent him to a home for troubled youth here. And I got to see people, you know, that were sort of like my poor little grandson here who ended up being institutionalized for life here. And they never amount to nothing here. The state doesn't know how to raise people. You know, they're deliberately trying to go ahead and destroy, you know, white men and white families here, and what happens, they need to be destroyed themselves.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you. You want to do this again tomorrow at 9, or you want to?
Yeah, we could go ahead and do that tomorrow again at 9, and essentially, you know, the charges, you know, they're still holding over. Well, we can go ahead and reintroduce them at any time, but they've lost the case. The case is done with, and the only thing I can think of is that essentially and that's one thing that Edgar Steele needs to realize. Don't accept, if you're screwed, take your screwing. You know, if you're guilty as hell, let's say you went ahead and killed a bunch of niggers and pigs. Take your screwing. Don't take a public defender. You know, just spit in their eye and, you know, tell them to fuck off or lick my ass or whatever here. That's what James von Brunn did.
I can see that being your style. I don't see that as being Edgar J. Steele style.
Edgar's a total pussy here. He's getting screwed, and part of me is sort of, you know, giggling about it. But, you know, I'm trying to get Edgar, you know, off by going ahead and going to these places and say he's a member of the Aryan Nations and tell him that no, he's not a member of the Aryan Nations. And
have you ever heard of that Fairview or Fairfax fella? Before.
No. Well, he's just some little snitch here that they suck up. I think Edgar's innocent, but, you know, just like I predicted here, he didn't get out. You know, he should have been out on bond. He should have been out on bail, as a matter of course.
He may get out yet. The judge hasn't ruled yet.
No, they didn't work. They don't. You know, I mean, look. you know, is somebody going ahead and plotting to murder his old lady? Since when is...
What's that?
Is that, this, you know, investigated by the local police and the sheriff's department? Or maybe the highway patrol or, you know, the state police? That's not an FBI thing here. You know, they're out to screw him. They're out to screw him, but good. And, you know, what happens is that Edgar Steele, for all his little smarts as a lawyer, you know, he's finding out the hard way that he's not as smart as he thinks he is.
Well, he may... I'm not convinced he didn't do it. I'm troubled no. by all the weirdness in this case, this pipe bomb, them finding it, you know, the pipe bomb. Do you clearly understand that Fairfax, he went to the... If I've got... Some radio reporter told me today that Fairfax went to the FBI and said, look, Steele hired me to kill his wife and mother-in-law. And then he got to feeling bad about it, and so I want to come to you and make, you know, make things right. But the reporter told me, and he's up there in the Northwest, he said he didn't tell him about the pipe bomb that he had already planted in Mrs. Steele's under her vehicle. Then they go to the quickie lube where they find it, and then, you know, they charge the informant who was supposed to be singing for his meal with the bomb charge. So it's a really weird case.
Jim, have you ever been lied to in the local newspaper? I've been lied to a lot. Have you ever been lied to in the local newspaper?
Oh yeah,
have they
of course.
Lied about you.
Oh yeah.
How do you know the FBI didn't plant that damned pipe bomb? How do you know they didn't do it?
Clearly that's a possibility, but see, the thing is, there are too many eyes on this, and anytime you get it too elaborate and too sophisticated, like they say with a conspiracy, you try to keep the numbers down because the larger it gets, the easier it will be to expose as fraudulent. And see, this is such a whopper. It is such a whopper that, I mean, I would think they would be more professional about framing him and manufacturing evidence against him. I don't think they would be so crude as they appear. I mean, if this is a framing, it's the worst job ever done by people who ought to be pretty good at it, right?
No, they're called the fumbling, bumbling idiots for a reason. And what happens is your biggest conspiracy was Oklahoma City and 911, and the thing about it is that essentially...
You proved my point there. See, those aren't fumbling, bumbling things. They, you know, if that's true, that's pretty fucking sophisticated. So why would they fuck up, you know, if they did this thing to Steele, it looks like they fucked it up really big time. Because it looks goofy. It doesn't look like... If they really did it, somebody could figure this out. Going to Jiffy Lube and they find the pipe bomb? That's
well,
weird.
the thing about it is, when it comes down to it, the only evidence, you know, is all, you know, the only evidence for him being dangerous, and they had to show that he is, quote, dangerous under the, you know, and that's exactly what they're putting him in, you know, that he's dangerous, and they are refusing to let him talk to his wife. From what I gather, his wife wants to talk to him, so that means that she doesn't believe it's true. So if he's allowed, you know,
that may mean it's true, or maybe she's wanting him to say, please, Edgar, tell me it's not true.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to get at the truth of the matter. See, I think people make a mistake that are, you know, on our side, so to speak, and that's a really anyway, I think it's a mistake for any group of people to just automatically assume that he's innocent because they charged him. Now, he may be innocent or he may be guilty, but I think it's just as stupid to immediately say, okay, there is no way in hell he did this. It's a possibility.
Well, let me just tell my position. What happens is my friends who are Christian Identity, now my enemies who are Christian Identity, they've gone ahead and changed. Visser, I'm a big chomo and all this sort of thing and all this sort of crap. What happens is here's one of my little amorphisms, is that truth is altogether a function of what side you're on. Now, as far as I'm concerned, Edgar Steele is sort of on our side, although, you know,
Edgar Steele is on
my side, so therefore,
I don't give a crap if he had a bag
with the severed heads of his wife,
right,
and his mother-in-law and all of his kids. Edgar Steele is innocent, and it's a setup. And that
I forgot your point. I got it. Okay, I'll call you tomorrow at 9:00.
Okay. Well, right, hail victory. Good night.
Thank you. This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi.